Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A new poll looks at the approval rating of Governor Noem. A South Dakota lawmaker says consolidation in higher education might help bring down tuition rates. And a bill addressing transgender health care advances in Peer Plus. What a difference a decade makes. Legalization of marijuana is back on the front burner in South Dakota. The Dakota political junkies have a lot to talk about this week in the top political headlines. John Schaff is professor of political science at Northern State University in Aberdeen. Jonathan Ellis is a reporter and columnist with Argus Leader Media. Jonathan joins us on the phone. Hey, Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Lori.
And John Schaff is with us in the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation studio at Northern State University in Aberdeen. Dr. Schaff, welcome.
Thanks for having me again.
Let's start with a piece that we just heard by SDPB's Seth Tupper about legislation from Ryan Maher about consolidation and looking at the costs of how much does it run different administrations, who's getting paid where, and is that an opportunity to make some changes? And I want to start with you, Jonathan Ellis, because Ryan Maher is talking in his proposed legislation, which he doesn't expect to have a lot of traction this year. He's kind of starting the discussion between Spearfish, Black Hill State University, and School of Mines in Rapid City. But if you look at the map, Jonathan, there are an awful lot of other universities in the state that are also pretty close together. Madison and Brookings are only 40 miles apart, for example. So if we look at geography, it's an interesting conversation. What are your thoughts about higher education consolidation?
Well, I mean, I think lawmakers are always looking for opportunities to save money, and higher education has been, I'll use the right word here, but the percent of, I think, general funds have not necessarily stayed consistent over the years going into higher education. And so, you have two institutions that are very different. I didn't attend either one of them, but, they're kind of a tale of two schools. I mean, in 2010, the total headcount for Black Hills was about 4,722, and now it's down, most recent year is down to 3,858. Mines, on the other hand, is up a little bit from where they were in 2010. So, but they're two totally kind of different schools. And if you look at, obviously, Mines, the majority of those students are engineering. They're in sciences. And I think if you look at the data on Black Hills, that most of those degrees are in, for example, education or business degrees. So they are totally different schools. I'm not in that industry, so I don't know what that would mean from an administrative point of view, but they certainly are not the same schools.
Well, we have somebody who is in that industry with John Schaff in Aberdeen, and I'm just wondering, let's talk a little bit, if you will, from personal experience about what an administration at a university does and why it matters, because it's not interchangeable.
Yeah, the first thing to note is that I'm a Board of Regents employee, and everything I say is my own opinion. I do not speak for the Board of Regents. You always have to say that because there's always someone out there who doesn't understand that I only speak for myself. But nonetheless, I think what I think is interesting about Ryan Maher's proposal is that higher education is certainly going through tough times, and Jonathan sort of alludes to that with, say, the enrollment statistics at Black Hills, and that's sort of the story all over the place. School of Mines and, to a certain extent, Dakota State are two outliers bucking that trend. Most schools are finding themselves struggling with enrollment for all sorts of reasons. What I find interesting about the proposal is that when we look to save money in higher education, the savings usually come from either raising tuition on students or cutting faculty and staff. Rarely do people look at administration as cuts, and there's plenty of evidence that, over the course of, say, even the last 30, 40 years, you can go back decades, that the increase in the United States, I'm not talking about national data, of number of students and number of faculty has basically tracked one another, whereas the increase in administration is skyrocketed as a percentage of where money goes in higher education. They say faculty numbers track student numbers, but administration has just grown exponentially. And so, Mr. Maher might be looking in the right area, though. It's also worth noting, again, what Jonathan alludes to is that you have different institutions have different characteristics. And it sometimes is difficult to simply say that these parts are interchangeable. Administration is there in part to sort of give an institution a character. Institutions have particular missions. You know, the missions of mines and Black Hills are not completely dissimilar, but they're relatively dissimilar. And you're probably going to get some sort of dissonance if you have one administrative unit trying to govern two institutions that have different missions. I don't think it's impossible. It probably could be done. But even Mr. Maher himself admits this is unlikely to pass this year. And it's probably something you'd have to do a lot of heavy thinking about how each institution would carry on their particular characters and their particular missions if you have administration that is trying to do kind of two things at once. It's not impossible, but it's difficult.
And we've seen in Sioux Falls, too, Jonathan, with the University Center, there's been a lot of it is a long-term conversation about classes in the city versus Vermilion versus Brookings and how do these institutions work together, but are also really trying to distinguish themselves. This isn't necessarily a new idea.
No, it's definitely not a new idea. Again, because of where enrollment numbers are, you're going to be looking for areas to trim expenses and to actually unveil a little bit of what we're working on here. This is kind of funny. We are actually working on a story here looking at why education in South Dakota, higher education, has gotten so expensive. And I'm in the middle of a ton of data that goes back decades, and I can assure you that everything John said about administrative costs rising exponentially is very true, and that will be part of our reporting in the near future.
Right, and as a parent of a student who just went through the whole college application process, those South Dakota schools did not come in as competitively as those out-of-state schools did when it came to financial aid. So that's a big piece of the conversation as well if you're trying to keep students inside the state and let them graduate without monstrous student loans. There's some work to be done. Let's talk about some breaking news, which is that the House Bill 1057 did pass out of committee, the House State Affairs Committee, this morning. And this is a bill that addresses transgender youth health care issues and criminalizes certain procedures. It was amended in that committee. Lee Sturbinger is working on that report right now. It used to be dealing with students under 18. Now it's under 16. It's been reduced to a Class 1 misdemeanor instead of a felony. Other changes as that bill goes forward. But, Jonathan, this is another thing, and I want to tie this into something that you recently wrote about bills that are unconstitutional and taxpayers paying for them or state government paying for them. There are consequences to this kind of legislation that we might see in the future. Can you make that connection for us?
Well, I mean, if this bill were to pass, it would almost certainly be challenged legally. You alluded to the other bill or the other voter initiative that passed in 2018 that was also challenged and found to be unconstitutional, and obviously the taxpayers got stuck with the attorney fees on that. But this particular issue would almost certainly be challenged legally, because as opponents have pointed out, that they're creating a class of or targeting a class of people or one particular population for what they say is medically necessary medical care, and so I would expect that this would be challenged.
John Schaff, the South Dakota Chamber of Commerce spoke out against this House Bill 1057 as well, and specifically talked about triggering economic consequences that include the loss of conventions, tournaments, top-level entertainment, and business investment from outside industries. Is that rhetoric? Is that the real deal? Do we see an economic consequence for legislation that comes out of peer that can be negative?
It certainly can be. There's a political scientist at Williams College, Daryl Paul, who wrote a book a couple years ago about this, about the way essentially he was talking more so about the gay rights movement, and this is a sort of cousin to that, I suppose, the transgender movement, how corporately driven this movement was. And you see this in things like when Indiana passed a religious freedom bill, how institutions such as Walmart, Apple, the NCAA threatened to boycott the state, when North Carolina passed one of those so-called bathroom bills, and the NBA moved the All-Star game, the National Basketball Association moved its All-Star game out of Charlotte. And so what you see, it's an interesting argument that it's using a corporate capitalist strategy to try to attack what is essentially a cultural issue. And what Daryl Paul basically concludes in his book and articles that he's written on this subject is that it's interesting that the argument goes hand in hand, that what corporate America wants is people to have unlimited choice, unlimited freedom, in the sense that there's any kind of limit, that any desire you can't fulfill, right? You should be able to fulfill whatever desire you want to have. And so corporate America in the Chamber of Commerce likes the idea of unlimited freedom, and any limit is a bad thing. And it's just sort of interesting that what we have here is a corporate interest siding against, which we normally align with, the conservative side of the political spectrum, in this case aligning against the conservative side of the political spectrum, because it's just interesting that the argument is made is not that this is wrong, but that it will hurt the bottom line and that we can't do this thing because we might lose money. And I think it's just kind of an interesting turn on the way these things often play out, slight twist.
When you say whatever desire you want to have, I think it's important to tie back to what Jonathan said, and that the people who are in the situation wouldn't call this a desire that they want to have. They would call it a medical necessity, a medical procedure.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Is that Jonathan misspeaks in one point, because the penalty is not against it's not a penalty against the people themselves. It's a penalty against doctors. And so this is the big question, is what is the medical necessity? So you have world-renowned psychologists such as Paul McHugh, who is the former head of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins, or Kenneth Zucker, who literally wrote the DSM entry on sexual dysphoria, who say when you're dealing with young people, the best thing to do is to help them identify with their birth sex, with their biological sex, and only later would you consider transitioning. And so in that sense, some of the best of the psychiatry is on Fred Deutsch's side. And you have another question of what he's talking about is doing medical interventions on people who are physically completely healthy. And so, for example, would you remove perfectly healthy breast tissue because a female identifies as a male, and whether that's the appropriate use of medicine? So the argument isn't about the individual who has sexual dysphoria. The question is whether the medical professional who is licensed by the state of South Dakota is using that medical license in an appropriate way by, for example, doing a medical intervention, including surgery, on a body that is physically 100% healthy. And this is why this is a fraught subject. And obviously, this is going to come up over and over and over again. And these are the kinds of things that we have to have dialogue. And it sounds like there was some dialogue at the legislature this morning, because they amended the thing to kind of lower the stakes, so to speak.
And then that goes back to some of the conversations we had the last time on this program, when a transgender legislative piece package came up, and healthcare providers were coming in and saying everything that we do is about what can we delay? How can we help people express an identity in a different way? Can you use a different name? You know, how long can we put off a procedure as we all work together to sort of figure out what is happening in this very fraught conversation? Very difficult for parents, and it also restricts parents with some of the choices that they have, because these children don't, a 13-year-old doesn't go into a doctor by themselves. They go in with adults who are doing a lot of research and trying to advocate for their children. So much to talk about here on this, but I want to make sure to get to something that Jonathan Ellis just published this morning, and that is about marijuana and what a difference a decade makes. And Jonathan, you can find this at argusleader.com. Give us a little background about the last 10 years and how this sort of began as an issue that meant one thing 10 years ago, and today it means something slightly different.
Well, I mean, you have to go back to 2006, and it was on the ballot in 2006, and it was really kind of overshadowed by other things that were taking place in that election, and nobody really paid a whole lot of attention to it. And medical marijuana almost passed. I mean, it was very close. And that was very alarming to people who were opposed to that. And so when it reemerges on the ballot in 2010, you had the South Dakota State Medical Association sort of leading a coalition against it. A lot of campaign, a lot of ads, campaigning against it that didn't exist in 2006, and so it's soundly beaten. But since then, I mean, we've had dozens of states that have enacted some sort of legalization or decriminalization, some regulatory scheme. Some of it's just for medical, some of it's for medical and recreational. It really is, in my mind, sort of an example of federalism. Of course, it's still illegal at the federal level. And so now it's back. Just to break a little news about that issue, I got a message that Dre Samuelson will be the political advisor for those campaigns. So they're back, and I think a lot of people are looking around and seeing how other states have done this. And I think that there's a possibility that one of these might pass, maybe the medical marijuana. I would probably bet against both of them at this point, but I think that we're getting closer in this state, and I think eventually, absent some kind of major scientific breakthrough that says marijuana is terrible for you, or I think eventually this is going to pass. Even in South Dakota, we may be one of the last states, but I think it will be here at some point.
Right. One of the lines from the Argus Leader piece that Jonathan wrote is that marijuana, which remains illegal under federal law, has become a paragon of federalism, that glorious model of government in which states and localities serve as laboratories of democracy. Just had to read that out loud. John Shaw.
That's a column. Just so we know, that's a column, not a news story.
That is right. This is one of those days where, yes, John Shaw is expressing his own opinions, not the opinions of the Board of Regents. And Jonathan Ellis wrote a column in the Argus Leader, which allows a little more latitude. Everybody good?
Okay. I'm just trying to hold back the tears at the beauty of Jonathan's prose.
I'm just throwing out a good sentence. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Right, sometimes you got to call it out. John, anything? John Shaw, any thoughts on just the... This is just going to sound cheesy, but the beauty of this process of we talked about transgender, times are changing and people are learning things about things that they didn't realize before. Marijuana was one thing 10 years ago. And now if you go to Mayo Clinic, they ask you what state you're from. Because in Minnesota, you can get that medical marijuana. If you're coming back to South Dakota after your visit, you cannot. So the sands are shifting under our feet.
Yeah, I think they're a couple things going on there. You mentioned, I think that probably medical marijuana is far more likely to become legalized in this state than recreational marijuana. And I think there was a movement, I think Jonathan's right, that probably up to, I don't know, maybe 2-3 years ago, there was obviously a significant movement in the country that was pro-recreational use of marijuana. I think that slowed down a little bit as we get data coming in from other states. And Colorado, of course, is the classic example of there's at least some regret, I think, coming out of Colorado that they're finding that long-term use of marijuana maybe isn't as healthy as they thought it was. A lot of driving while under the influence of marijuana. There's a long article. I want to say it was in the New Yorker about the marijuana today is not your daddy's marijuana. The THC levels are higher, and so the consequences of its use are more dire, which doesn't mean that we don't legalize it, but it makes that argument a little bit harder. And I just think the irony is that if through ballot initiatives, we're talking about loosening our restrictions on marijuana while our legislature is trying to raise the age at which you can buy a cigarette, or actually I think it's any tobacco product, right? I'm trying to think of what the actual bill says. And so we're making it harder to buy cigarettes and vaping materials while we're making it easier to purchase marijuana. And we need to, maybe go one way or go the other way, because we seem to be working at cross purposes there. Either we let everyone do what they want, or, we get serious about it. We use the public health argument to restrict both of them. It seems weird that we're saying more marijuana, less vaping. And we got to get our story straight on this.
And what's more controversial? Oh, go ahead, Jonathan.
Oh, I was just going to say, it sounds like the legislature is just creating an additional black market. I mean, and what marijuana legalization does with us is, if it's done done in the right way, it kind of eliminates the black market, but which will always exist. So, yeah.
What's more controversial than marijuana and transgender people seeking health care services, plastic straws and plastic bags? Let's just end with a proposed legislation to ban a ban. And this is essentially legislation hoping to make it so individual cities cannot ban plastic bags and plastic straws. And I got to admit, I never knew this was such a hot button topic until you start talking about plastic straws. Who wants to start with the idea of peer banning a ban so that cities can't ban a product?
I will say that I was in Washington, D.C. earlier. Well, I guess it's 2020 now, isn't it? So late last year, I was in Washington, D.C., and I had to drink through a paper straw, and it was substandard. But
Did you have to drink through a paper straw? Or
yes.
Did you have not used
a
straw at all?
This is true. Well, which is what I ended up doing, is just throwing the straw away, because it basically made my Coke taste like paper. But I saw a brilliant tweet by, there's this reporter at the Argus Leader, last name of Ellis, I think is his name. And I think he was right. I think Jonathan was right. I have yet to see the burning desire from any local government in the state of South Dakota to ban plastic bags or plastic straws. And so I think we have a solution in search of a problem. And I'm all for plastic straws. But I don't.
Are you? Is that the hill you want to die on?
This is the one I will die on. In fact, I've got T-shirts I'm making about plastic straws. But I'm pro-choice on straws. If you want to use a paper straw, okay, go right ahead. I feel like they're trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist, and it seems like someone is trying to take a position for some other reason to show we're not like those people in San Francisco.
Right. And
I think we already knew that.
We're being flip about it, but Jonathan, it all goes back to flooding in Sioux Falls and the river being completely saturated with plastic bags that were washing up. So the problem that people are pointing out to is one of climate change and garbage and waste and plastic floating everywhere. So in all fairness, we've had our fun, but there is a real issue at stake here. What a great First Amendment conversation today. John Schaaf, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Ellis, thank you so much.
We'll do it again.